It's the BNS in 20 Minutes or Less podcast. Your daily download of X92.9's X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna.
It's Monday, July 27th, 2020. I only have a few more days left to do that this week, so I'm really going to drag some of these out. Maybe even longer as the week goes on. By the end, the first half of the podcast is just going to be me holding that note on you. Shauna's away this week. She's in Ontario where it's apparently very, very hot. It's hot here this week, too. I almost slept in this morning. My kids, they took 3 hours to go to sleep last night, which is just the absolute worst on a Sunday night when you're trying to get ready for the week ahead, especially a busy week where, you know, you don't have a co-host. And I forgot to set my alarm in that mayhem. So Brigham came in at 3:30 in the morning, woke us up, which normally is annoying, but I shot out of bed and I was like, oh man, what time is it? I didn't set my alarm. Which really, really would have been bad if Shauna wasn't here, because then you just hear like the traffic music play. And that early, people would be wondering if they'd lost their minds or if something was wrong with the station. But no, it would have just been me. So, whew, narrowly dodged a very bad situation there. Also, I just saw this news, but we didn't talk about it all on the show today because I missed it. But the 11 of the 30 players in the Marlins have tested positive for COVID-19, and this is kind of throwing the entire MLB season into jeopardy, which just started on Thursday. The Marlins game is canceled tonight. So is the Yankees game against the Phillies, because the Yankees were playing the Marlins over the weekend, and they're not sure if any of their players have contracted the virus. So, I mean, this might be the end of the MLB season only, what, 4 days after it started? I hope not. Let's get into this podcast.
The BNS in 20 Minutes or Less podcast.
Well, our Friday night hailstorm was right on schedule. I was sitting in our bedroom with the window open and I heard whack. And I perked up. And then 15 seconds later, whack. And 5 years living here is long enough to know what that sound is. And then the hail came. It's weird though, because normally there's like some precursor to the hail. There's rain or there's thunder. Then you can even kind of tell when the rain starts to change that hail is on the way. I don't think I've seen it yet where the first sign of hail is a big hailstone itself. But sure enough, the hail came and it dummied McKenna's plants and made a mess of our yard. So I don't know how many times we've had hail so far this year in our part of the city, but it's been quite a few. And you know, you think you've seen them all. We've had it every kind of hail day is. Tornado alert hail. Hail that starts without warning. Hail with thunder. Hail without thunder. Big old fat hail. Itty bitty pebby hail. Slushy hail. Bouncy hail. Hail that ruins your picnic.
BNS in 20 minutes or less.
The Calgary Zoo is open again, and my wife McKenna took the kids on Friday, and they were looking at the flamingos, and there was a woman standing near them telling her kid about the flamingos. And she said, you know, flamingos are pink because of all the shrimp they eat. And we both thought, well, that doesn't sound right. Is this woman just making up facts to answer the tough questions kids can ask? So when McKenna told me about this, I looked it up, and damn it, the woman was right. It says here, the bright pink color of flamingos comes from beta carotene, a red-orange pigment that's found in high numbers within the algae larva and brine shrimp that flamingos eat in their wetland environment. And it turns out they're actually born gray, and then they turn that famous pink color as they grow. So I think I owe that woman an apology, even though she didn't hear me say it. I doubted her. I thought she was just making stuff up, and she was right. Although the idea of going to the zoo and loudly stating incorrect facts is much funnier, isn't it? Like, you know, the giraffe's height was selected for by lady giraffes on dating sites. I want a giraffe who's tall and likes to travel.
VNS in 20 minutes or less.
I mentioned earlier that my family went to the zoo this weekend and they said it was great. So the zoo's taking lots of COVID precautions. And the best part was all of the marquee animals were out and active. The giraffes, hippos, lions, bears, gorillas. My youngest, Brigham, who's 3, he said the only animal he wanted to see that wasn't there was a blue whale. I don't think Brigham understands that we can't house blue whales in zoos. They're the largest creatures that have ever lived. But it got me thinking, say we had an aquarium here in Calgary big enough for a blue whale. And this is a theoretical question because that kind of tank doesn't exist. And there would be ethical concerns even if it did. Could we even get a blue whale here? How would you move a blue whale across land and keep it alive? Give that some thought for a moment. In 1997, SeaWorld in San Diego rescued an orphaned gray whale. They nursed it back to health and they released it into the wild. And they did so by lifting it onto a flatbed trailer using a crane. But that whale only weighed 19,000 pounds, and SeaWorld is like 2 minutes from the ocean. It's right there. Blue whales are 200,000 pounds, and we're 1,000 kilometers from the ocean. So I was looking into some different options. The world's largest heavy lift helicopter can handle a load of 44,000 pounds, so that's easily ruled out. Companies have moved much larger and heavier loads by road. There was actually a Saudi company in 2014 that transported a water desalination unit that weighed, if I did my math correctly here, 14,000 pounds. Or sorry, excuse me, 14 million. 14 million pounds. So weight by road isn't an issue. The problem would be keeping the whale wet and cool and kind of suspended, because I think the whale would collapse under its own mass. It's evolved to float in the water, not like have all that that weight sitting on its belly. So in short, it doesn't seem possible to move a living blue whale from the coast to Calgary. Although I hope some engineer is listening right now and I just ruined their day.
VNS in 20 minutes or less.
The NHL playoffs are set to begin on Saturday in the hub cities of Edmonton and Toronto. And on Friday, there was a press conference held between Gary Bettman and some members of the media and Jason Kenney and Edmonton Mayor Don Iveson about Edmonton's role as one of the hub cities. And Don Iveson stumbled across something that I think is quite brilliant. Listen to what he said here.
Finally, though, the biggest thanks of all is due to Edmontonians for our penalty killing stats when it comes to COVID-19. We've kept the virus on its heels here, and we need to keep it that way.
Slipping a bit of hockey talk in here. This is how you get Terry to listen. This is how you get Terry to follow the rules. I appreciate Dr. Dina Hinshaw up there hitting us with facts, but if she could speak Terry's language. Yeah, well, you know, obviously you've got to get pucks in deep there and stick to our game plan. We've got to keep those COVID numbers down. You know, all the guys are wearing the mask. It's not like the visor. Doesn't make you a So, you know, obviously we're just going to stick to our game plan, take it day by day.
Where's your mask, bud? What'd you say to me, Ter? Why don't you hit that Y button, drop the mitts, we'll have a conversation.
VNS in 20 minutes or less.
Over my 5 years working here at the station, I've gotten to know a few of the bands we play personally, and one of them is the Zolas. I was chatting with their lead singer, Zach, on Instagram recently because he had posted this cartoon explaining what defund the police means. And I'll try to describe the cartoon without you being able to see it, but it showed a police officer carrying all of these duties on his back and an onlooker saying, if we defund the police, how will he handle all of that? And then in the second panel of the cartoon, it shows those duties distributed among a bunch of other people, addictions counselors, social workers, mental health workers, affordable housing, and the load the officer is carrying is reduced to keeping the peace. And I thought that really nailed the approach to defund the police that I think I can get behind. But there's a problem with the messaging in some of these calls for police reform. And I have some friends who have participated in the big protests in New York, and they've posted about abolishing the police. The exact phrase they used was, a world with zero police and zero prisons where we can all feel safe. To me, that's utter madness. Like, a world without police, we're going to very quickly feel the exact opposite of safe. But, you know, moving some money from police to people who are experts in handling certain issues, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Like, you have a situation and you can call someone with very specific training to that situation rather than always defaulting to the police every time. In some cities already, and I don't know if we're doing this in Calgary here, but there are teams of police and social workers or police and nurses trained in handling mental health crises. And I love that idea. Like, you still have peacekeepers for when it's necessary, when public safety is at risk, but, you know, there are other interventions available as well. And I would imagine many police officers would support that too, because right now I think we're asking them to do too much. My dad was a police officer. I've seen how difficult that job can be. And I think rephrasing it from police are bad, we don't need them, to police have an impossible job and we could spend some of that money in a more effective way would bring more people on board, don't you think? The problem is that doesn't fit on a protest sign.
The VNS in 20 Minutes or Less podcast.
I got a message from a Calgary police officer who listens to this show and said, Calgary Police has PACT, which is the Police and Crisis Team. It's an officer and a mental health nurse who drive around together dealing with mental health calls for service. There's also CART, Child at Risk Response Team, and that's a cop and a social worker that drive around together responding primarily to kids that are in tough spots. And I asked, how are these programs viewed amongst police officers? Like, are they viewed favorably, or would officers prefer to work with another officer
as opposed to a civilian. And this officer said, PACT is so busy following up with mental health clients that they already dealt with that they usually just take referrals from frontline officers who have already responded. CART is amazing when needed. He said there could definitely be more PACT units for sure, but in short, they are viewed favorably. He said, as an officer, I would love to be security for a mental health professional who is far better equipped at dealing with a schizophrenic who self-medicates with meth. And I was thinking, like, yeah, the fact that our police officers are the ones expected to deal with that, and then the public are upset when they are not also mental health professionals. Like I said, it's an impossible job right now. But I'm glad to hear that this is a direction that police officers themselves would like to see us go.
VNS in 20 minutes or less.
My parents got rid of their home phone because they said the only people who were calling it these days were fraudsters. But that's true, but it's also kind of sad. It's like the end of an era. They've had this phone number since they moved into their house in 1987. And now, when you call this number, which has been assigned to my family for my entire life, this is what you hear.
The number you have dialed is not in service.
And it is kind of sad. It's the number all my friends called when I was growing up. And considering I still know all of their childhood home phone numbers, I bet they would know mine, too. I'm going to call one of my best buds, Ted, here, to see if he would know.
Oh, Dick.
Teddy.
How's it going?
How are you now?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Not so bad. I just have a quick question for you.
Let's hear it.
What is my parents' phone number?
Ooh. 9731?
Correct.
Maybe.
And when's the last time you called that number?
Oh, God. It couldn't have been high school. You would have had a cell phone. So, like, grade 8.
Grade 8. Yeah. 16, 17
and
years
rang,
ago.
Yours was fantastic because you go 9731. It's just tap, 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 all four corners. It really feels good.
I still remember your parents' phone number as well.
Let's hear it.
33305.
Man, that one has a nice ring to it too, doesn't it?
It does have a nice ring to it, but I wish we could reformat our brains and erase that to make room for more pertinent information these days.
VNS in 20 minutes or less.
Last week on the show, I was talking about some alcohol myths, some actual myths, some that I believe to be myths, and I got an email from a friend of the show and regular contributor to the show, Fred. Now, everyone has their own beliefs around alcohol, and Fred is no different, but he said, not just at the Saddle Dome, he finds draft beer affects him more than bottled beer. I'll second that, too. And I've heard theories about the carbonation or the lines that it comes through. I'm not sure. Maybe it's even just like the scenarios in which you drink it. You drink it faster or more of it. I don't know. But it does seem to be a little more banged up than bottled or canned beer. Fred also said he finds dark liquors hurt worse than clear ones. And he said he can't prove any of it, but, quote, I just know no matter what, I get flush with the Asian curse. It's only half my body, though. Fred is half Asian. And he's talking about alcohol flush reaction, which is a real thing you've probably heard of. And the timing of Fred's email is funny because I was just reading a theory as to why some Asian folks react to alcohol this way. I was looking into the question I asked online was, like, how did early humans find consistent, clean sources of water to drink? Like, were they just getting sick all the time? And the answer is yes, they often drank water that wasn't entirely clean, and they did get sick and die quite often. But there was one professor who answered this question, and he was talking about some of the different theories as to why flush reaction works, or why flush reaction exists. And he said, it basically comes down to two solutions to water sanitation, alcohol and tea. He said, some cultures discovered fermentation and began drinking beer and wine. Other cultures started drinking tea, which of course requires boiling the water. This would explain why about one-third of Asians have a genetic issue with alcohol and suffer from alcohol flush reaction. In reality, this may be simply because this inability to assimilate what is essentially a poison was selected against in the West, as people who couldn't drink alcohol tended to die off of things like cholera. It's like, wow, that is, it makes perfect sense, and it is just a theory. It's not, you know, it's not gospel, but I've always wondered, like, why does this affect people from one part of the world and not other parts of the world? And it may simply have to do with how we solved the problem of water sanitation way back when.
VNS in 20 minutes or less.
My mom bought my boys this little kit for blowing bubbles. And for whatever reason, it came with a single orange cotton glove. You know, like those cheap finger mittens that kids wear in the winter, sometimes underneath their warmer mittens, or at least that's what we did in Saskatchewan growing up. It's a really odd thing to be included in a bubble kit. Like, when you were blowing bubbles as a kid, did you ever think, I wish I had one glove right now? What is the purpose of that? But for whatever reason, Brigham, who's three, he loves this glove. He's barely taken it off in days. We're like, Brigham, what's up with the glove? And he just said, I got to have my glove. So when we've gone out, we have this little guy wearing one orange glove, like a tiny Michael Jackson. He's Gary the Glove Payton, Donald Glover, Danny Glover, Courtney Glove, Davis Glove the Third, Mankind's alter ego, Dude Glove.
The BNS in 20 Minutes or Less podcast.
What does a good passenger on a road trip do? What does a good passenger do? Specifically, the passenger sitting in the front seat. The driver's duties are clear. The driver is to deliver the vehicle and everyone in it safely to the destination. But I think that the passenger has duties as well. And I want to make kind of a list of those. See, when we go somewhere, I almost always drive. McKenna prefers to relax and sleep and hand out snacks. And I love driving, so it works out well. We were in Banff on Saturday, and I had a few drinks, so she drove back to the city, which means I had to take on her role. And I think I'm a better passenger than she is. Like, it was late and dark, so I stayed up to watch for wildlife and to run the music so she could just keep her eyes on the road. I also think if you're driving in an unfamiliar place and you get lost, that's on the passenger, not the driver. The passenger is the navigator. They have to be working the maps, I think. If I'm missing any big ones, you're welcome to weigh in here at 238-X929. Even little things like when the driver is trying to turn out onto a busy road, if I'm driving, I appreciate when the passenger sits back in their seat so I can see both ways. Like, if they're leaning forward, then you're kind of like trying to look around them. Like, a heads up passenger will get back in their seat. That's a heads up play on the passenger's part. What else? What else should a passenger do on a roadie? Keep her clean here.
VNS in 20 minutes or less.
This news broke shortly after I left on Friday for the day. And as soon as I saw it, I knew that today we were going to have to pay some sort of tribute to Turk, the wild turkey in Ramsey. Turk has been presumed dead. Evidence suggests a run-in with coyotes. And now, Shauna normally reads the eulogies on this show, but since she's away, I will be filling the roles of both the eulogist and the soloist. We are gathered here today to remember Turk, a.k.a. Turk Diggler, Calgary's wild urban turkey. Turk was a resident of the neighborhood of Ramsey, but enjoyed venturing out into neighboring communities like Bridgeland and the Beltline. He brought joy and probably some confusion to those who spotted him. It's believed that Turk came to Calgary as part of an agricultural event last year and escaped. He inspired fan clubs and dominated the Calgary subreddit, filling a void left by the Sage Hill Rock. He even had a run-in with the police at one point. Turk was resilient, surviving far longer than could be expected of an urban wild turkey, till those damn yodis got him. You will be missed, Turk. We'll think of you and the pitter-patter of your gross little clawed feet whenever we walk the streets of Ramsey. Hope you poured out a shot of wild turkey for our boy this weekend. And now a musical tribute.
Turkey in the straw. Turkey in the straw. Hats on, boots on. Yeehaw. Sing a little song called Turkey in the Straw.
You've been listening to the BNS in 20 Minutes or Less podcast. You want more? Then tune in to X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna live on Calgary's alternative X92.9. Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time at x92.9.ca. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and have BNS in 20 Minutes or Less downloaded daily to whatever device you use. Later.